And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. And we're going to get right back into our commentary. Every week we have a commentary. Hopefully we keep getting these. This one is called Salmon Safety Net Full of Holes, and written by Kate Lazaroff of the Environmental News Service. The federal government has released its plan to save salmon in the Pacific Northwest, including habitat protections and fish hatcheries. But ruling out dam removal for the time being, the plan, 5 years in the making, is a deep disappointment to environmental and fishing groups, saying it may doom endangered fish to extinction. Quote, extinction is not an option, said George Frampton, acting chairman of the Council on Environmental Quality, released the draft plan. The proposals include hundreds of millions of dollars in federal spending aimed at preserving and restoring 12 species of salmon and steelhead trout in the Columbia and Snake Rivers protected by the Endangered Species Act. Quote, if we do nothing, salmon in the Columbia River are going to go extinct, said Will Steele, Northwest Regional Administrator for the National Marine Fisheries Service. It's as simple as that. But leaders of conservation groups and sports fishing organizations say the Clinton administration's plan amounts to, quote, a death sentence for the salmon. Unless it is changed dramatically before it is finalized, the administrators released a draft biological opinion by the National Marine Fisheries Service, which will guide operations of the 29 federal dams on the Columbia and Snake Rivers and their tributaries. Also released was a draft basin-wide salmon recovery strategy incorporating the requirements for a biological opinion and including additional measures to improve hatcheries, limit salmon harvest, and restore salmon habitat. The agencies expect to make both documents final later this year following a 60-day review by states and tribes. The proposed federal strategy outlines actions to address the four so-called H's of salmon recovery, habitat, hatcheries, harvest, and hydropower. Under habitat, the strategy calls on the states to increase their efforts to improve water quality and stream flows, remove barriers to fish movement, and rebuild stream buffers. In the river estuaries, the federal agencies will support restoration and acquisition of important salmon habitat areas and continue aggressive predator controls. I believe that means shooting seals and sea lions. In the mainstream of the Columbia and Snake Rivers, federal agencies will work to restore shoreline habitats for migrating salmon and to continue protection for the Hanford Reach. Under the hatcheries, the strategy proposes reforms of federally funded hatcheries to minimize harm to wild salmon and improve survival rates of hatchery stocks. In addition, hatcheries will work to prevent extinction of weak stocks by collecting eggs and sperm from wild fish and releasing the resulting offspring into streams inhabited by wild populations. Under harvest, agencies working with states and tribes will cap harvest of protected species at current levels. There may be further reductions of harvest levels where practical, though, through more selective fishing techniques, license buyouts, and other approaches. Under hydropower, the draft proposes to maximize survival of juvenile and adult salmon swimming past dams by improving water management and quality and increasing spill levels. Among other measures, the goal will be to improve the ability of young and adult fish to pass safely through the dams and reservoirs that separate spawning and juvenile rearing areas from the ocean. While ruling out dam breaching for at least the next 5 years, the draft proposes to begin engineering and other studies for potential breaching of four lower Snake River dams. Any decision to breach the dams would require authorization by Congress, and completing these studies will reduce the time needed to secure that authorization if breaching is later deemed essential. The studies would include an evaluation of strategies to reduce impacts on the communities, industries, and Indian tribes, and ensure any breaching proposal is fair and affordable. President Bill Clinton urged cooperation to avoid extinction. Quote, only in partnership with state and tribal governments and other stakeholders can we restore the salmon without resorting to costlier measures, he said in a statement. But critics said any partnerships under the plan as currently drafted will be insufficient to protect salmon. This draft plan won't save salmon or help Northwestern communities, said Mark Van Putten, president and CEO of the National Wildlife Foundation. Quote, it's simply an extension of the current efforts that have failed to stop the decline of salmon. Unless we work together to improve it, this draft plan will only keep the extinction clock ticking. And another quote, dam removal is the only legally and scientifically defensible option for salmon recovery, said Buck Parker of the Earth Justice Legal Defense Fund. Quote, this opens the federal government up to further lawsuits and draws other private landowners and water uses in the basin into this fray. Under the draft plan, dam breaching or bypassing might not be completed until 2017. The cruel irony of the draft biological opinion is that its timeline for eventually bypassing the dams lines up perfectly with the timeline to extinction for Wild Snake River spring and summer Chinook, said Charles Govan, president and CEO of Trout Unlimited. Govan referred to a study released a year ago that predicts extinction for several Snake River salmon species by 2017. These salmon don't have time for us to tinker around for 10 years and hoping that the real cause to climb the four lower dams goes away, said Govan. Science is perfectly clear. Extinction of these stocks is upon us if we don't fix the hydro system, and soon. That's our editorial for this week. Once again, entitled Salmon Safety Net Full of Holes, written by Kate Lazaroff of Environmental News Service. I want to thank her for that one. And back to activist news, this time from Denmark. Last Thursday and Friday, five people were arrested in Jutland, the mainland of Denmark. Two Dutchmen, two Danish men, and one Danish woman. They were, according to police, followed to an area in which a very large fur farm is located. There they were arrested as they were getting out of a car and taking what police call raid gear, that is, headsets, coverings for their shoes, and wearing headlamps. This was enough for the police to take them into custody. What then follows is a procedure that in Denmark is not uncommon. They have been all charged for a minimum of 80 charges. Practically every single animal rights action in Denmark from the last 2.5 years, these charges include arson, disrupting the national welfare, politically motivated crime, simple destruction, and not least, cruelty to animals. That last charge is probably a charge that has been pushed by the Danish Fur Breeders Association. The charges altogether amount to 8 years of imprisonment if they are convicted. This alarming amount of charges is a way for the police attorney and prosecutor to discredit the people in custody and make it look like they are the most dangerous criminal people, at least in the public eye. Those who know the judiciary system better know this is not necessarily about placing the guilt, but the purpose is discrediting the whole animal rights movement. In short, throwing as much mud as possible at them and hoping some of it sticks. And moving on to more animal news, Washington, D.C. Appeals Court supports red wolf protections. A federal appeals court has let stand a decision upholding federal regulations that prohibit the killing of endangered red wolves on private property. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit denied a request for the full court to reconsider a panel decision upholding the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regulations means that the agency can continue to carry out its program to bring back the red wolves in North Carolina. Two property owners in two counties in North Carolina had challenged a federal regulation, claiming the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service did not have the authority under the U.S. Constitution to prohibit the killing of endangered wolves in North Carolina. In June, the Fourth Circuit panel rejected this argument. The appeals court decision reaffirms the authority of the federal government to take steps to protect endangered animals, even when those animals are scarce and only exist in one locality. And skylarks may starve if British farmers use genetically modified crops. This from East Anglia, United Kingdom. Songbirds like the skylark feed on the seeds of plants considered weeds by farmers. These birds will suffer if genetically modified herbicide-tolerant crops replace the formerly weed-abundant fields, a new British study has found. The researchers predict that the severity of bird declines will depend on which farmers are most likely to adopt genetically modified crops. If their use is restricted to intensive farms with low seed densities, then the effect will be minor, but if the herbicide-hardy crops are adopted by a wide range of farmers, then the bird declines are more likely to be severe, the study found. And critical habitat has been proposed for the endangered fairy shrimp. Responding to a court order, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed to designate critical habitat on about 12,000 acres for the endangered riverside fairy shrimp, a small vernal pool crustacean unique to Southern California. Vernal pools are seasonal wetlands that fill with water during fall and winter rains. Not all areas within the broad boundaries outlined in the proposal will be considered critical habitat because some of these areas, such as shopping centers, homes, or roads, do not contain habitat considered essential to the conservation of the riverside fairy shrimp. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is not proposing critical habitat on non-federal lands that are already protected by an existing operative habitat conservation plan. Vernal pools were once abundant throughout most of Central Valley and coastal areas of Southern California, but have declined significantly, according to Michael Spear, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service California-Nevada Operations Manager. Quote, as vernal pools have disappeared, populations of riverside fairy shrimp and other species dependent on them have declined, Spear says. The pools have been destroyed or disturbed by urban development and agricultural conversion, alterations of vernal pool hydrology, off-road vehicle activity, livestock overgrazing, and other land uses. The Center for Biological Diversity filed suit to force the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to propose critical habitat for the shrimp and won its court order. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will accept comments on the proposed rule until November 20th. Here's the email address. Write this down carefully. FW1RVFS at FWS.gov. On the address, FW1RVFS at FWS.gov, and be sure to include attention RIN1018-AG34, your name and return address in the email message. Once again, be sure to include in your message attention RIN1018-AG34, and be sure to include your name and return address in the email message supporting critical habitat proposals for endangered fairy shrimp. And unfortunately, two mule deer have been shot in Grand Teton National Park. Two adult large mule deer bucks were killed September 18th in Grand Teton National Park. The deer, apparently killed for their trophy-sized antlers, were discovered by park rangers. Both bucks had been shot. One buck's antlers had been removed. The second deer's antlers were intact, and park rangers speculate that someone may have passed near the scene of the poaching, causing the poachers to flee. The killing of wildlife, and I might add the possession of firearms in national parks, is a federal offense and may be prosecuted as a felony, and associated heavy penalties including imprisonment, fine, seizure of equipment, and restitution for damage or loss of property and resources. Through Park Watch and Jackson Hole Crime Stoppers, a reward of $5,000 is being offered for the information leading to the arrest and conviction of anyone involved. Grand Teton National Park Ranger Colin Campbell urges anyone with information to contact the park at, here's the number, 307-739-3327. Once again, that's Grand Teton National Park Ranger Collins number, 307-739-3327, and there is a $5,000 reward if you know who shot the deer in Teton National Park. And it's time for a Links Up. This news from Portugal and Spain. Portuguese and Spanish environmentalists are that if powerful wine retailers force the end for natural cork, endangered Iberian wildlife like the lynx could be wiped out within the next 10 to 20 years. The last 5 years have witnessed an unprecedented increase of British, Australian, and American wine retailers switching from natural to plastic corks. Marks and Spencer, for example, are already using up to 30% of the plastic stoppers for their own brand names. Wines. This severely threatens the 3,000-year-old practice of cork stripping in southern Portugal and Spain, which in return preserves one of Europe's most ancient woodlands. These forests are home to the rare animals like the black stork, vultures, and the Spanish imperial eagle, who depend on the rich diversity of these cork oak forests. The beautiful woodlands are also one of the last habitats for the Iberian lynx, which cannot survive without these traditional systems of cork farming. If demand for cork collapses, warns Helena Freitas, president of the Liga para Proteção de Natureza, eucalyptus plantations for paper and pulp companies will wipe out the remaining habitat for the lynx, a population which has halved in the last 10 years, leaving just 50 lynx in Portugal. Be sure to write to your wine retailers or to your wine wineries asking them to please use natural cork from Spain or Portugal, and you can take back that plastic corked wine. Uncle Dennis encourages it. In news from Brazil, a new sanctuary for the endangered southern right whale has been approved by the Brazilian government for a 130-kilometer, that's about an 80-mile stretch of ocean off of southern Brazilian coast. Well, that's good news for the right whale. And western hummingbirds are driven east by fires and drought. Wildfires in western states may push migrating hummingbirds farther east than usual, offering a bonus to people who might maintain nectar feeders for them. Most years, maintaining nectar feeders for hummingbirds in eastern states is an April through September affair, during which just one species of hummingbird, the ruby-throated hummingbird, can be seen. But this year could be different, says Jim Wilson, an ornithologist for the Missouri Department of Conservation. He said birdwatchers in Kansas have reported an unusual number of sightings of calliope, broad-tailed, broad-billed, and rufous hummingbirds this summer. Birdwatchers speculate that a few of these western birds may wander eastward each year. An eastward jog through Missouri is not as significant on a trip that stretches from Montana to the Texas coast and then 1,000 miles across the Gulf of Mexico to wintering grounds in Central America. The abundance of fall flowers and nectar feeders might make Missouri and other eastern states attractive stopovers for hummingbirds after crossing the Great Plains. Wilson says the upswing in exotic hummingbird sightings may be related to drought and wildfires that have swept western states this year. Quote, a severe drought affects nectar supplies in these species' normal range and forces them to search for food elsewhere, said Wilson. Add to that the loss of millions of acres of habitat blackened by fires, and you're looking at an enormous number of displaced birds. They have to go somewhere, and we shouldn't be surprised to see some of them in Missouri. And Shell oil drilling threatens the world's biggest tiger reserve. This from Jonathan Leake, environment editor of the Sunday Times of London. Shell oil is planning to survey the world's largest tiger reserve after company geologists pinpointed it as one of the richest potential sources of oil and gas on Earth. The Sundarbans area of Bangladesh is home to some of the world's most endangered wildlife, besides up to 450 tigers. It is home to three species of wild cat, the Ganges River dolphin, and crocodiles. Environmental groups will start court action against the company, claiming it is carrying out illegal work. A Shell spokesman said the protest did not take into account today's high standards of exploration and production, adding Shell and its partners respect the Sundarbans and are committed to carrying out blah, 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 blah. You know what they mean. They mean they're going to dig for oil wherever the hell they want to dig for oil, and ain't nothing you can do about it. That's what they mean. And from tropical forests, we read that tropical forest logging and hunting are spreading human diseases. Researchers at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health have found the combination of forest hunting and current tropical logging practices may play a central role in the emergence of new diseases. Diseases have always passed from wild animals to human hunters, but dramatic increases in tropical logging, complete with new trucks and access roads, have allowed local disease outbreaks to have potentially global consequences. This according to Nathan Wolf, Cameroon country director for Johns Hopkins Program in Ecology and Health. An international team of scientists led by Dr. Wolf found that in the hunting and butchering of wild animals, particularly monkeys and apes, provides an important mechanism for cross-species transmission of novel diseases such as Ebola, monkeypox, and possibly HIV. When combined with the transportation provided by logging companies operating in tropical ecosystems, isolated outbreaks resulting from the hunting and butchering of wild animals have a new potential for global spread. Other activities discussed by the authors, such as ecotourism, veterinary research, and exotic pet ownership, may also play a role. Quote, industrial modern societies are characterized by high population densities, substantial geographic mobility, and close contacts with large numbers of other humans, said Donald Burke, a doctor director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Immunization Research. Quote, the connection of these societies to traditionally isolated rural hunting cultures, which have been greatly facilitated by modern logging, provide an ideal recipe for microbial emergence, unquote. The study is the first to examine the connection between modern logging hunting practices and the emergence of infectious diseases. The study appears in the inaugural issue of the journal Global Change and Human Health. And mercury is still around from the 49er days. In a report released by the U.S. Geological Survey, they have documented elevated levels of mercury in bass and catfish in the Bear and South Yuba River watersheds in the Sierra Nevada of Northern California. Liquid elemental mercury, or quicksilver, was used extensively in the Bear and Yuba River watersheds since the early gold mining days, according to Charlie Alpert's USGS research chemist, the study's chief scientist. Quote, elemental mercury, the kind you see, is only one part of the problem, said Jason May, USGS biologist. It is the presence of methylmercury, the organic form of mercury, that accumulates in organisms that will be of most concern. Methylmercury is a potent neurotoxin, which is known to be especially detrimental to developing fetuses and young children. USGS has submitted its data to the California Environmental Protection Agency and their Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. Environmental health officials in Nevada, Placer, and Yuba counties will be working closely with the toxicologist to determine whether formal notification to the public will be made concerning potential risks from fish consumption from these areas. So you like fishing, huh? Don't do it in the Sierra. Juneau, Alaska, the escape of thousands of farm-raised Atlantic salmon in British Columbia has once again raised concerns in Alaska about mixing non-native species of wild salmon. known number of mature Atlantic salmon weighing 10 pounds or more recently escaped from a fish farm at the north end of Vancouver Island, about 350 miles south of Alaskan waters. The fish escaped from a large circular net pen that holds up to 75,000 fish. Alaska biologists and fishermen worry that farmed salmon will breed with wild salmon and hamper local stocks' ability to survive. They also fear farmed salmon could bring diseases to wild fish or beat wild stocks out of space and food. Although improved nets have reduced the escape rate of the farmed salmon and probably approximately 0.3% of the fish produced escape, Alaska officials and fishermen would like to see the Canadian industry shut down completely. Ironically, Atlantic salmon have been proposed for listing under Federal Endangered Species Act in 8 of Maine's rivers. Why don't they just ship them back there? Here's the news. A recent survey from the Maine Land Use Regulation Commission shows that eroding stream banks and sediment from snowmobile and all-terrain vehicle trails are harming Atlantic salmon in several Maine rivers. The report, which details all-terrain vehicle trails with silt running into the rivers, found 62 sites of non-point pollution, many of which are in prime Atlantic salmon spawning areas. Atlantic salmon are proposed for protection under the Federal Endangered Species Act. And a proposed project for a new 2.5 million square foot mega mall in northern New Jersey's Hackensack Meadowlands has environmentalists and residents up in arms. The Army Corps of Engineers is currently accepting comments on the proposal as part of its decision-making process for granting the Mills Corporation the building permits that it seeks. One way developers like Mills get around restrictions on Meadowlands development is to buy credits from a wetlands mitigation bank. The bank is a chunk of land that's been restored to what some scientists believe is a more environmentally useful wetlands than the current conditions of much of the Meadowlands. Credits purchased from the bank help developers get building permits from various state and federal agencies. Not surprisingly, these mitigation banks are a source of controversy among environmental groups. Many question if they work and whether a so-called restored wetlands is better than what was there before. Many also worry about overdevelopment in this area of New Jersey. In the 32-square-mile Hackensack Meadowlands District, only 7,700 acres of wetlands remain in an area that used to contain 20,000 acres of estuary and freshwater marsh, as well as other wetland environments. Not much going on there. Here's a little bit more animal news. According to the New York Times, threatened monarchs lose much of their winter habitat. Biologists have found over the past 30 years the monarch butterfly's critical winter habitat in Mexican forests is dwindling due to logging, development, and other habitat destruction. And in a Reuters News article, African monkey pronounced extinct. Anthropologists have reported that the Wildlife Conservation Society failed to find a Miss Waldron's red colobus monkey during their six-year forest survey in Ghana and the Ivory Coast. Scientists cited habitat disruption due to logging, road building, and farming as the primary cause of the species' extinction. And here's that other story from Mexico, written by Lorraine Orlandi. Mexico, prompted by a new study showing the fragile monarch butterfly is facing rapid destruction of its winter habitat, has proposed more than tripling the size of the monarch reserve. Mexican and international scientists have suspected for years that the central Mexican mountain forest to which the large orange and black butterflies migrate annually from Canada was rapidly deteriorating because of clear-cut logging and farming. A study published recently confirmed their fears, revealing 44% of the original forest has disappeared since 1971, including the protected areas. At that rate, the original forest will be gone in less than 50 years. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for news on Earth First Radio. If you'd like to get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, please send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Once again, that's the Earth First Journal, and the first issue is free. P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. You can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer every Thursday evening at 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, but not for very much longer. Go to the website www.microradio.net/FRSC and download the player and then listen in. There are lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime you want to tune in, but you can always find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web Those are at www.radio4all.net. That's www.radio followed by the number 4 followed by all.net. The software you need to play those MP3 files or is free on that website, or you can just download them and listen to them anyway. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to broadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and portions of this newscast were prepared with the help of Stefan and Eon. Our theme music was performed by Daryl Cherney off the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to some more Daryl Cherney. This one's off his Timber cassette, and it's called Arizona Power Lines.
A nuclear demon, a menace to our time, and he travels through the desert on the Arizona power lines. Mark Davis and Mark Baker and Margaret Millett too, they looked up at those towers, oh they knew what they must do. Oh, ain't it grand out in the desert with a blowtorch in your hand. Down on you, you know. Now the FBI was watching, so they sent in Michael Tate, a phony Vietnam veteran vowed to guard the fascist state. Well, he won their trust and friendship, to his flaws they all were blind, till those flares lit up the skies above the Arizona power lines. In your hands, oh, take it slow. It could all come crashing down on you, you know. They arrested Dave Foreman, said he was behind the scheme. Well, they jailed the founder of Earth First, but they did not stop the dream. So should you walk at Abby's desert and see a little flame that shines, don't you say a prayer for the next to dare the Arizona power lines.